Thanks for listening to the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along this morning. Brad Ricca is a filmmaker, a poet, and the writer of the book Superboys, The Amazing Adventures of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman. It was the first time biography of this pair who invented an iconic figure in American history, in the comics, on the radio, on television, and still going strong today, 75-plus years later. Brad Ricca, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to ask where you came upon the story of Jerry and Joe, because I know you spent almost a decade doing research for this book, and it's an incredible story of these two young men growing up in Cleveland and their dreams in the beginning and their successes and struggles at the end as well. What made you want to write a book about the Superboys?
Well, it's kind of interesting because their story, they were born in Cleveland and they come up with the story in Cleveland. And I was born in Cleveland, not during the Great Depression, but growing up in Cleveland, my dad sold windows, and he would drive my brother and I around. And Cleveland, you know, it's a great city, but parts of it look like they've seen better days, and parts of it sometimes look like Krypton, like they're half exploded, and it was some once great civilization. So he would drive us around and tell us stories about how Cleveland used to be so great. And one of the stories he told us was that Superman was created in Cleveland. And I just thought there was no way this could ever possibly be true. Because Superman was really cool, and I liked comics, and I liked Superman, and I liked Cleveland, but it just didn't seem like it was possible. So that idea kind of lodged in my head. And as I grew older and kind of grew up and started, you know, doing things about books and writers and research, that idea never went away. That not only was it really cool that the guys who created Superman were from Cleveland, but the question really bugged me is that I really wanted to know how they did it.
It's a fun story that you tell. It's almost a loving postcard to Cleveland, I have to say, Brad, in the first portion of the book where you're talking about Jerry and Joe growing up in the city, and despite not having spent much time in the other corner of the state, it made me start to grow some fond feelings for the city. I almost are selling it for tourists, I must say.
And it's something, it's kind of a Midwest thing too, I kind of think, because it's that idea that you grow up and you live somewhere that's not good enough. It's not as famous as New York City or Chicago or Los Angeles or kind of anywhere. You're just growing up in a city where people work really hard and yet no one seems to get anywhere. And I think it's that kind of mentality that really drives them to create this really crazy character that makes no sense the first time you see it. But I think it's only a place like Cleveland or like kind of any Midwestern city or town where you have to struggle for everything and you have to work really hard. And the thing that gets me about the story is they don't just come up with the story, the idea for Superman overnight. They work on it for 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
That was very eye-opening. For some reason, I thought that Superman hit big right out of the gate, but really, when you look at the story of Jerry and Joe, it was something that they toiled with for years before, and through numerous rejections from publishers of all types before someone finally picks it up.
Yeah, and that's really one of the more unbelievable stories. You know, nowadays, everyone has lawsuits. They want to control Superman because it's the character's worth millions, billions of dollars in licensing and merchandise. But back then, nobody wanted to touch it. They sent it to literally every newspaper, comic publisher, and comic book publisher there was, often 2, 3, 4 times, and they would get these rejection letters that say, "Stop what you're doing. You have no talent. No one will ever believe this story." but they never back down from it. They don't really change it to accommodate all this different criticism. They know it's good. They know it's going to hit, and they just keep pushing and pushing and pushing until somebody finally buys it at the end of 1937, and Superman debuts in Action Comics number one in 1938, and it's an immediate hit, and the rest, like you said, is history.
Brad Ricca is the author of Superboys, The Amazing Adventures of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman. He just won the 2014 Cleveland Arts Prize Emerging Artist Award in Literature for the book, which is now out in paperback. And Brad will be in the Cincinnati area for an appearance at the Campbell County Public Library's Fort Thomas branch next Friday, November 7th at 7 o'clock, part of their signature event series. You can learn more at our website, wvxu.org. And as I was reading Superboys, Brad, I found it as equally interesting as a history of comic books and the comic book industry as it was growing through that time in the 1930s in America, and having Joe and Jerry so swept up into that craze, that and science fiction magazines as well. This was really, I guess you could say, the birth time of those genres.
Yeah, everything's happening at once during this story, and that's, I think, no coincidence. And it's also one of the things I like the most about it is I really like thinking about where ideas come from, but I also really like when kids, because they're no more than teenagers, are involved in a marketplace and involved in publications that they really don't know what they're doing. So you have all these companies on the East Coast, they're starting to put out comic books, and they don't know what they're doing, but they know that kids are reading them, so they just keep doing it. They know they're making money. At the same time, you have all these 17, 18, and 20-year-olds who are artists, who are writers, who have had no formal training most of the time, like Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, but they do it anyway. And I just really love that, you know, well, the adult world is telling them, no, you can't do this, or you don't have training. They just kind of ignore it. And do it anyway, and the result is you have all these great magazines come out, science fiction magazines and pulp magazines, and they become so popular that they really pave the way for the comic book. And comic books were brand new when they started sending out Superman, and Superman really solidifies the comic book as this one-of-a-kind American invention that's lasted now for over 75, 80 years.
And that, I think, may have been the crux of their problems, the problem that they ran into with the rights to Superman that has resulted in close to 80 years worth of litigation. The story goes they signed their ownership rights to Superman away for $130. Today, worth millions and millions. And you can see why that legal battle continues to rage.
Yeah, and it's really, the story is the story of the American dream, because you have two kids from Cleveland who aren't going to college who come up with this icon, this American icon, a fictional icon, I might add. But at the same time, it becomes a tragedy because they work so hard on it. But in order to get it published, and, you know, there's lots of argument here over, did the publishing company take advantage of them on purpose, or was this just the way things went back then? And you'll have to come to the talk to. I have a big theory on what that was. But in the end, to have it published, they had to sell the rights to the character. And it came out to, they were being paid $10 a page for 13 pages, and that's $130. And they didn't own Superman. But even though that is very tragic and they lose an enormous amount of money over it, it also sets the stage for the last three quarters of their lives where they continue to fight for the rights to the character. And it's this really kind of, they write about truth and justice in the American way, but in that last part of their lives, they become that. They don't give up, and they do all these different sorts of things in the real world to draw attention to their plight.
As you've been going around the country and doing a number of interviews about the Superboys book, what have you found most interesting in people reacting to your writing?
What always gets me every time is how much people act like Superman is real. And I'm one of these people, you know, so I'm not making fun of them. But Superman is we have to sometimes pinch ourselves and say, you know, this is a fictional character. This is like Alice in Wonderland or Huck Finn. But we don't act like that. So I'll go to do a book signing or a presentation, and everyone's wearing the T-shirts. And everyone's talking about Superman like he's sitting right next to them, like he's a real person. And I don't think there's another fictional character in America who we do that to. And I know there isn't. And I think that's just really, really cool because it shows how much we value pop culture. And it doesn't have to be in a kind of weird, nerdy way. It can be a really cool way, too. And I really like that, you know, seeing people respond to that part of it. But also to my point of the book is that these two guys wrote Superman as an autobiography. And no one had really said that before, is that of the things that happened in their lives, they worked into the character, because most people just dismiss Superman as, oh, those are just kids' comics. And to see people respond to that and say, I never thought of it like that, you know, this is really, it makes Superman more important. It makes it more like literature or more like art, and that's been really cool to see, too.
Oh, I love in the story, though, especially talking about Jerry and Joe's high school years, where the motivation for a lot of Jerry's writing and Joe's drawings are trying to impress the girls.
Yeah, I mean, that's it for everything. and it makes perfect sense. When I was going through their high school newspapers that they both worked on, and I found a poem that Jerry had written, and it was addressed to Lois. And it turns out there was a real Lois Lane, and all of a sudden it makes sense that this, you know, we like this character so much because on some level we know that it's true. I mean, we know what it's like to like someone who doesn't like us back. And that's Superman. That's Clark Kent and Lois Lane. And it turns out it was all real. It's all stuff that they went through in high school and afterwards.
Well, looking forward to what more of the story you'll bring to audiences here in the Cincinnati area with your appearance next Friday. Brad, thank you very much for being in the book club at 91.7 this morning.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing Superman fans and just people who are interested in the story out at the library. I think we're going to have a really good time.
Brad Ricca is the author of Superboys, The Amazing Adventures of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman. He'll be at the Campbell County Public Library Fort Thomas branch on Friday, November 7th at 7 o'clock for a talk, part of their signature series. Free tickets are required and seating is limited. You can find a link at our website, wvxu.org. Superboys now out in paperback. And just recently, as I mentioned, Brad Ricca won the 2014 Cleveland Arts Prize Emerging Artist Award in Literature. This is The Book Club at 91.7.
What is the scariest book you've ever read?
Hi, this is Susan. I would have to say the scariest book that I have ever read would have to be Stephen King's It. After that scary clown, I have never been able to look at a storm drain the same. Every time I look at one, all I see is those clown eyes and that clown face and those big teeth. But that is definitely the scariest book I've ever read, and it still gives me chills thinking about it.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm from Northside. It's not exactly scary, so I'm kind of dodging the question, but it's really Halloween-y to me. Bulgakov's Master and Margarita. It's a little goofy, but fun. Lots of witches and Satan and all that stuff, but still a good time. So good Halloween book. Maybe not exactly scary, but good for this time of year.
This is Dick Fishcorn from Montgomery, Ohio. Far and away, the scariest book I've ever read is Rosemary's Baby. I remember when my wife and I were in her dad's camper on Dolphin Island in Alabama in a thunderstorm, and I'm reading the book, staying up all night, and I was scared to death. Very happy to have my wife at my side.
Hi, my name is Chelsea in Oakley. The scariest book I ever read was American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis, because the inside of Patrick Bateman's head could be my neighbor or the girl who makes my coffee in the morning.
My name is Mary Ann Bressler, and I live in Fairfax. And there are two books that I think are the scariest books I've ever read. The first one was The Stand by Stephen King. In the beginning of that book, scared me to death. I had nightmares about it. The other one is Red Dragon by Thomas Harris, which is the first book about Hannibal Lecter. It preceded Silence of the Lambs. And that book scared me so much that when I was reading it, I had to go around and close all my windows and lock all my doors.
Hi, I'm Sherry. I'm from Western Hills, and the scariest book I've read was Left to Die by Lisa Jackson. And I'm such a scaredy cat, I made it to like page 100 and then stopped.
I'm Conrad, and I live downtown, and the scariest book that I've ever read was Stephen King's The Stand. I read it when I was 12 years old. What my parents were thinking, permitting me to read The Stand when I was 12 years old, I don't know. The book is about a virus that sweeps across the world and kills about 99.4% of the world's population. Now, what was really scary about that is that one of the characters, with the initials RF, I think it was Robert Flagg, is in a lot of Stephen King's books. And I have trouble reading any of his books with that character in it, because it brings me back to being a 12-year-old kid and reading this book late at night and not being able to sleep for days at a time.
Now, the book club at 91.7 wants to know, what book did you read as a child that left a lasting impression? You're invited to call the book club at 91.7 hotline, 352-9188, and leave a voicemail. You'll be prompted for your name, where you're from, and what book impressed you the most and why. You may hear your answer on the air. What book did you read as a child that left a lasting impression? Call 513-352-9188 and share your story.
You've been listening to The Book Club at 91.7. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Technical director is Bruce Ellis. Rick Andres is music director and segment engineer. Robin Carey Allgaier is the announcer. And the club's web guru is Jim Nolan. Jim, what are you reading?
Well, my wife just handed me a copy of the new Stephen King novel, Mr. Mercedes. So I'm only a couple chapters into it. But, you know, it's Stephen King, so you're expecting a lot of horror and a lot of things that he normally writes. But actually, this one's a bit of a twist in that it's kind of a detective slash murder mystery kind of thing going on. It's like a job fair, and suddenly someone out of nowhere in a Mercedes just drives through the entire crowd and massacres a bunch of people, and then there's this retired cop who's trying to get to the bottom of it.
Stephen King's Mr. Mercedes. Thanks, Jim. And I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening to The Book Club at 91.7. If you tune in next time, you'll hear about Rest in Pieces, The Curious Fate of Famous Corpses, and just in time for Veterans Day, World War II Cincinnati. I hope you'll tune in next Saturday morning for The Book Club at 91.7, and stay tuned for Weekend Edition, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.